Senator Muskie, Chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Arms Control, undertook to hold hearings on this question in 1971, thereby helping to revive international negotiations on this measure, which had been virtually dormant for nearly a decade. As you have heard, I think, testing is particularly dangerous to children. The recent Chinese test left a trail of infant deaths across the country, much larger than had happened before. That's one reason women should be particularly interested in the test ban issue. Other activities of legislative groups on arms control include presenting testimony at congressional hearings and assembling other witnesses, preparing informational material for their membership, organizing local groups targeting these states with key swing senators, arranging media briefings and television and radio appearances, releasing statements by leading citizens and stimulating editorial comment, promoting letter-writing campaigns and delegations to uncommitted congressmen, and coordinating activities such as conferences and speakers' bureaus with other organizations. Today, it is the administration's hope and its goal to conclude a preliminary draft of a comprehensive test ban treaty before the special UN session in May. President Carter strongly supports this measure. In May 1976, candidate Carter said, "The longer effective arms reduction is postponed, the more likely it is that other nations will be encouraged to develop their own nuclear capability. There's one step that can be taken at once. The United States and the Soviet Union should conclude an agreement prohibiting all nuclear explosions." And therefore, I think that what is needed is for many of us to support this measure in Congress, as well as the Strategic Arms Limitation Agreement, SALT, which is also being negotiated at this time. Your support for the administration's efforts in these ways to reach these arms control agreements is urgently needed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I know I should make up another excuse, but I'm going to be very honest with you, because I think the beautiful part about women is we have to be honest. We have a wonderful opportunity to be able to share Margaret Mead with everyone on live TV if we have her on at 11:25. Now, the only thing is that it's really not fair to both Kay and Ethel, who've been sitting here waiting patiently and are afraid that all of you will leave the minute Margaret speaks, and I think you definitely should hear what they have to say. But I also think that we should be able to share Margaret, who's a wonderful person, with the people who didn't make it to Houston. So will you please stay after Margaret speaks to hear Kay and Ethel so we can proceed? Meanwhile, we welcome this wonderful woman to this wonderful podium that we all respect.
Let's not waste time. I am trying to answer the question of why women have done nothing since World War II as a group to deal with this threat that faces us. I think the important question for us to answer is to look at why, over and over again, we've made a move and then we've gone home, and we've made a move and then gone home. Why, if the women are the civilizers of the world, why haven't they been civilizing it? Now, I think there are two kinds, or maybe three kinds of answers that are relevant right now. One is that women are only civilizers of the world when they have men cooperating with them also. And that some 20,000 years ago, men started moving their operations outside the realm where women were allowed to perform. And there was no tie between the woman in the village who could deal with her husband, either at day or night, and the center of an empire where women had no chance to operate, and finally to the world. We're further away today from the role of the average woman in caring about the things she cares for than we've ever been before. And it's only in the last 10 years or so of the women's movement that we're beginning to get women sufficiently into positions of power and negotiation so that there's again a ladder up from the woman in the home and the woman in the village and the woman dealing with local things and the fate of the world. And this is, of course, what this conference has been particularly committed to widen the participation of women at every crucial point, so that again we will have the component that women have always supplied to care for the next generation, see that they're fed and sheltered and cared for, and to work for peace. That's one part of it. Now, I think there's a second part that we have to think about very hard, and that is that through the hundreds of generations that have made it, us human, it's been men's task to be willing to die. And they've died in enormous numbers by their own arrangement, sir, but nevertheless, they've died. And they've been willing to die. But I think that women have been traditionally committed to hope. If they weren't, they would never have kept those babies alive with no medical care and nothing. Kept them alive through every kind of vicissitude. And the trouble is that if we only think about catastrophe, it's women's natural capacity to say we don't believe it. Somehow there will be life. And so we've got to combat this terrible danger that is facing all of us, everywhere in the world, all our children, and the unborn children of generations to come. We've got to combat this with hope, with a belief that if we get together, every single woman in this country, and they forget their scraps and their endless little complications and rows that are going on in this country between all the good workers everywhere, if we forget this and keep our eye on the ball, which is we must stop this arms race, and we must start decelerating it, and we must start it right away. Now, if everybody does this, there's no problem. And we must stop saying, but what can you do about Congress? To begin with, Congress can't do anything for us unless they're elected. And there are plenty of voices in Congress that are willing to work to stop the arms race, to stop our merchants of death, to start our selling arms to both sides under this nonsense that says that's the way we make peace. But we've got to support them. Now, if the whole country goes out hard, every woman in it. Women are famous for keeping their eye on the ball. And let's keep it there.
I think we all wish we could be as young as Margaret Mead. How wonderful. We will now proceed on with the panelists. Again, I apologize to the two women, but I think it was a wonderful opportunity to get to share her with Margaret Mead with people outside. Remember, those of you, please stay. I don't think it was fair to those who didn't get to finish. Thank you.
I'm Ethel Taylor, National Coordinator of Women's Strike for Peace and an International Women's Year Commissioner. Is a woman's business. Men have failed. When women campaign for the vote, they had a slogan: give us the vote and there will be no more wars. We won the vote, but we didn't stop wars and preparation for wars. And we are still excluded from decision-making positions which deal with war and peace. And this is what part of our struggle is all about. But until we reach those positions of power, and we will, we must work against the macho theory that more nuclear bombs equals more security. The women's peace movement works from without the government to change what goes on within. And we work together with concerned Congress, women, and men, and some of them are here with us today. But we call for the support of all the gallant women who are crusading for women's rights and women's equality to include in their agenda the right of women, men, and children to live without fear of nuclear extinction. The Women's Peace Movement is involved in campaigns to end the arms race, not the human race, to feed the people, not the Pentagon. Campaigns which call for the elimination of the Damoclean sword under which we live and under which our children, grandchildren, and succeeding generations will live if the sword doesn't drop first. Government leaders are getting frightened about what has petrified us for years, a nuclear arms race out of control. Plutonium, a byproduct of so-called peaceful nuclear energy, is the stuff that nuclear bombs are made of and is available in many countries. Time prevents me from outlining specifically what peace women are doing, but I do suggest the following actions for your immediate attention. There is a sheet outside which explains what complete and general disarmament really is. And the fact that this goal was agreed to by the Soviet Union, the United States, and all the UN nations in 1961. We ask that you write the President and Ambassador Andrew Young and urge that the United States demand the implementation of the 1961 agreement at the special session on disarmament of the UN General Assembly in May of 1978. We also ask that you urge the President to appoint women to be part of that delegation to the conference. There is also a petition circulating urging the President to reject the neutron bomb, the bomb which kills people but protects property. We hope you will sign it, circulate it here, and take it home and circulate it in your communities. We support President Carter's proposal to cut our nuclear stockpiles in half if the Russians will, and President Brezhnev's proposal for each side to halt the production of new nuclear weapons. We must not let these opportunities for an agreement to pass by. We must tell the President that this is what we want. The mind-boggling meeting this morning between Begin and Sadat is an example of breaking through protocol and faith for the saving of lives and maybe the world. The United Nations has declared this decade International Women's Decade. But this designation can be meaningful only if within this decade women take their place beside men in positions of policymaking, even within the United Nations. It can be meaningful only if it signals greater involvement of women in the liberation of our country and the world from military domination. The future is up to us. Peace is a woman's issue.
Women, sisters, I'm Kay Camp, International President of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and it is my assignment to bring to you what's happening in the Women's International Peace Movement in 4 minutes. Well, the International Women's Peace Movement is closely tied with the whole women's movement for equality, development, and peace, as it should be, and to the mixed gender peace movement. But I'm going to concentrate now specifically on what women are doing to promote peace around the world. Let me tell you, the movement is burgeoning. The International Women's Peace Movement is greatly stimulated by International Women's Year and Decade. The indignation and the outrage are growing among women everywhere. Their consciousness is being raised, our consciousness, to the fact that equality without peace would be worthless, meaningless, that militarismo is institutionalized machismo, that the man-made global war system must be abolished, and that the arms race threatens nuclear annihilation and itself victimizes people, kills people around the world, and especially women and children, by denying their basic human needs. The a woman's place is in the world. With rights come responsibilities, and homemakers and earthshakers are drawn together by this single fact that peace is our priority. Now, the network is growing. I just want to give you a few examples, local to international, of what's happening around the world. You know, of course, about the courageous women of Northern Ireland who united Catholic and Protestant women to end the violence, and they have greatly reduced the violence. In Jamaica, a group of women in a black ghetto, severely victimized by the violence, political and gang violence, have formed a Women's Peace Action Center, a tiny center where they train youth in nonviolence and come together themselves to learn about the problems of equality, development, and peace. And they run a small preschool to teach children peace. In the Middle East, women are discussing on both sides. Israelis and Arab women are discussing how to achieve peace in the Middle East. In Chile, courageous women have just held a hunger strike on the steps of the UN building there. Women whose husbands and menfolk have been kidnapped and disappeared and unreported by the junta. This was a very brave and courageous act for justice and peace. In South Africa, there's a new women's group formed across the barriers, black and white, to work for peace and justice there. In Osaka, Japan, a group of women, hibakusha, survivors of the bomb, are going all out to keep us all informed about the horrible effects we've heard about of just one small, tiny two atomic bombs. In Calcutta, in Mexico, Mauritius, Ghana, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, Australia. In the socialist countries, peace is very popular, and disarmament is being paid much attention to, becoming popular. All of these examples I've given are of gap bridging, about which women have a special talent. We should use this to the fullest. We have many other talents also, which have been referred to. But this is very important, and it has characterized the work of my own organization, the Women's International Peace League for Peace and Freedom, since it was formed during World War I, when women from countries whose men were slaughtering each other on the battlefield came together to promote peace and end the war. Let me just say that in 1975, the first Women's International Disarmament Seminar was held at the United Nations, bringing together women from socialists and the United States. And now a second one is being planned for April in Vienna, which will feature women from NATO and Warsaw Pact countries, but also around the world. And this one is being sponsored by the Subcommittee on the Status of Women, NGOs in Geneva. And this, too, is a step forward. There are conferences. The Continuing Committee for the World Congress of Women has just held a conference featuring peace and disarmament. The International Committee for International Year of the Child will feature a peaceful world for the child. There will be a caucus, Women's Caucus Day, before the next disarmament seminar of NGOs in Vienna. And the report of the Secretary General on what the great international women's organizations have been doing since the International Year of the Women's Year is just out, with some 14 or 15 organizations whom you all know listed. I'm coming to an end, although there is much more that I could say about the women's peace movement and the total world peace movement. But I want to appeal to our congresswomen here to do everything they can to arouse the concern of the administration and of the Congress for the crucial importance of the special session on disarmament, in particular, of course, the question of disarmament in general. The president himself must attend, and we must have good women on that delegation, and I'm sure they can help with that. I just want to thank them for their shining example of how a woman's place is in the world, and thank you all for staying.
Thank you. I have two fast announcements before we open the floor. Is Illinois State Rep. Susan Catania, C-A-T-A-N-I-A, here? Catania, is she here? We have a message for her, if anyone sees her, from Selma Wheaton of Chicago, Illinois. She has a letter from the Chicago League of Peace and Freedom people and can be contacted at the Holiday Inn. So if anyone sees her, please tell her we have a message for her up here. At 2 o'clock today in room 203, there's an important meeting on reaching the public on peace and disarmament. Media people and community organizers and a congressional staffer will be there giving advice. For people who want to follow through on some of the things that we started today, please, please attend. Again, 2 o'clock, room 203, demonstrations of available media and printed aids, including a slideshow on peace and disarmament, will be part of the strategy session. We are now going to open it up to public questioning. There are two microphones, one and two. I think what we'll do is rotate. We'll go from one to two and then back to one and back to two. We have to do two-minute limitations on the questions so that we don't have people giving speeches or we won't get through it. I apologize sincerely for trying to pack so much into 2.5 hours. Our problem is the microphones get shut off at 12:30, so we really have to meet that deadline. But if it's okay, we will open up with whoever's first at number one and fire away.
My name is Mio Hayashi, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois. Now that we have let the genie out of the bottle, there is no security. Security is a nebulous word. I believe in zero power. I have the privilege of being in Washington, D.C. on a bill for conflict resolution and peace. Bill number H.R. 2651, Congressman Brown, I would like to also give you this copy of the bill and also the additional amendment that will be proposed for the Peace and Disarmament National Action Plan. I would like to read this perspective that I wrote.
I write this
perspective for all mothers who are still waiting on the quay for their sons to return from wars. ERA is human rights. When you perceive East is East and West is West, and never the twain shall meet, man will always be the oppressor or oppressed. It is a dichotomy, and in a dichotomy, there will always be war, either or, pro or con. East is West, and West is East, and the twain has met in marriage as co-equal partners, equal in our unequalness, uniqueness.
Viva la différence. Ma'am,
settlement,
I'm sorry.
Of ideologies.
I'm sorry, but your 2 minutes
right
are
to
up.
Left to right in change.
Ma'am?
Quality of life is the goal.
Pardon me.
The name of civilization. In the
pardon me. I'm sorry. Your time is up, and we do have to... Well, I'm awfully sorry, but we have lots of other people who would like to participate, and if we allow everyone to use more than 2 minutes, we won't be able to have any other participation. I'm very sorry. I think we now have to go to mic number 2, please.
Madam Chairman, I'm State Representative Joan Hastings Toon, delegate from the state of Oklahoma. And I want to tell you as briefly as possible that I am in definite disagreement on your disarmament procedure. Peace is a word that has a wonderful ring, but we do not have the decisive power as to whether we will have peace or whether we will not have peace. We must be militarily armed and peaceful at the same time. And that's the woman's obligation, is to see that we are. Because without arms, we are vulnerable. In this convention, we've taken up a great deal of rights, civil, equal, and every other kind. We spent years fighting the results of slavery in the United States. And I see a kinship with disarmament. When the slavers arrived on the African coast, the black tribesmen didn't have a chance against their superior strength and arms. And consequently, blacks were kept in bondage for years. And right here in this convention are fighting for their equality because they could not protect themselves. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about protection. We're not talking about being aggressors. Show me a time in the history of the United States that it has ever been an aggressor.
Vietnam. Chile.
As a mother who has lost 2 sons, I do not speak lightly on this subject. It's an eternal hurt. But it's a part of your citizenship. Only through strength can you have the peace that this nation deserves. Think of both sides and think of it closely, because women are the leaders of this world. You talk about give me equality. If you want equality, work for it as they have told you. Run for office. All the good things that they've told you. But remember, when you do this, you're already equal with men. You've got to sacrifice to get what you want.
I'm going to have to apologize,
too.
Ma'am. Your time is up. I think Congresswoman Burke would like to have a response.
Only through strength is there peace.
May I just take one very brief moment to respond? I think that the direction that we are trying to bring into perspective is at what level do we assure peace? And by expending more money, if it is not productive, are we really increasing our chances of maintaining that peace? And really the discussion we're having here is what is maintaining the peace? And does it make any difference after you have already had one nuclear bomb to fall that you need 2,000, does that give you any greater assurance that you're going to provide strength and peace in the world? And what we're hoping to bring into perspective is that if we can have more knowledge, maybe we can evaluate whether we're stockpiling greater assurance of security or whether or not we're just acting in a vacuum and spending money that has no implication for our peace or for the future at all. And that's really, I think, what we're trying to bring into perspective.
Thank you. Microphone number 1.
My name is Vicki Memminger. I'm a college student and also a welfare mother. And I think I have something to say that relates to all of us women here. The defense budget is used to control women all over the world, and the selling of arms to South Africa and other third world countries is but another strategy to keep sisters working for free and are used directly against us to keep us from gaining power. In agriculture, women contribute 44% of the total world food supply. In Africa, women supply 80% of the food supply, and in Africa, 90% of agricultural aid and training has gone to men. And not unless women get some kind of economic independence from the man for her work, will we be able to connect our struggles and gain power for all of us.
Thank you very much. Microphone number two.
Okay, my name is Jennifer Ho. I'm from California. I'm an observer here. And I strongly support the desires of the women here for peace. I think this is a desire of the masses of American people and of people all around the world. However, while we desire peace, I don't think that we should be fooled into thinking that it's going to come about under the present government. The U.S. is stepping up its store of nuclear and conventional arms, updating and improving them. But the reason for this is not just that women aren't participating in the government. The reason for this is that the U.S. government represents the huge U.S. corporations, and not just the armaments manufacturers, but Gulf Oil, Chase Manhattan Bank, IBM, etc. These countries are exploiting and oppressing the masses of women and men throughout the Third World. For the past century, U.S. imperialism has exploited the vast majority of people in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and they are not...